Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, November 7th. Midland voters play key role in Trump's win. The story was written by Trevor Hawes, editorial director. Former President Donald Trump is set to serve a second term after major news outlets called the election in his favor early Wednesday and opponent Kamala Harris conceded in the afternoon. Midlanders did their part to see the Republican candidate be reelected, with 46,601 people casting their vote, just shy of 80% of all ballots cast in the county for president, according to unofficial election results from the Midland County Elections Office. Harris was a distant second in all but a few voting precincts and was the top vote-getter by a narrow margin in precincts 305 and 306, which are generally located in southeast Midland. Out here in the heart of the Permian Basin, oil and gas are of high economic concern, and Trump's support of the industry was met with positively. Quote, "He takes oil and gas seriously," said freshly re-elected Railroad Commissioner Christy Craddock. "He gets the importance of the industry, and we appreciate that," adding that the new Trump administration may treat the national oil and gas industry with more common sense and offer access to funding. Craddock says she looks forward to working with the president-elect again. Quote, "You could tell while he was on the campaign trail that he realizes how important oil and gas is." James Beacham, chairman of the Midland County Republican Party, shared similar sentiments. Quote, "If you listened to Donald Trump's victory speech last night, we factored prominently when he was talking about oil and gas, so I think it's super to have someone in the White House who understands domestic energy," he said. The Trump victory, however, is larger than fossil fuels. Quote, "To a large extent, one of the great appeals of Trump is that he's not a conventional person who does things the way they've always been done," Beacham said. Continuing the quote, "As we look at America today, we have massive debt. The inflation under the Biden administration is absolutely horrendous. You can't spend your way to prosperity. It just doesn't work," end quote. Aside from the economic distress felt by many average Americans, Beacham said Trump's position on border security was a major factor to his success on Election Day. Quote, "People I talk to want a semblance of stability at our borders," he said. "We have to have healthy immigration, but you have to have security, stability, and manage resources well. It's not that Republicans are haters. You simply need to have control of the border," end quote. Midland County Republican Women President Karen Wood quoted Sue Brennan, a former County Republican Party chairman and MCRW founder who recently passed away, quote, "It's a great day to be a Republican in Midland, Texas. And I'll add that it's a great day to be a Republican in the United States of America," Hood said. In a statement on behalf of MCRW, Hood said, quote, "We've just witnessed the greatest political comeback that we have ever seen. This one will go down in history. We are so blessed and thankful that God chose to give our nation another chance," end quote. Hood continued, "Worries of open borders, gone. Worries of hyper-liberal lawlessness, gone. Hope for our country's prosperity has been renewed. No matter what you think about Donald Trump, he does what he says," end quote. For John Burkholder, who won an at-large city council seat Tuesday, the results show that the people's voice was heard. Quote, "The results are very reflective of how the country feels and how we want things to be fixed," he told the Reporter-Telegram. In reflecting on the intensity of the election night, quote, "I thought it would be more of a nail-biter," said Steve Vallela, who won his Midland County Commissioner race for Precinct 3. With their votes, Midlanders clearly said what they want from the White House, end quote. Incumbent, new faces, secure board seats. The story was written by Kesley Salinas. The Midland Independent School District Board of Trustees has 7 seats, 4 of which were up for grabs during Tuesday's general election. Districts 1, 2, 4, and 7 each had contested races for the school board seats, with incumbents Michael Booker, Robert Marquez, and Brian Murray running for re-election. Vice President Katie Joyner opted not to run again. Here is a recap of the unofficial election results for the MISD Board of Trustees. District 1. According to unofficial voting results, Booker won the seat as District 1 trustee with 54% of the vote and a total of 2,384 ballots cast. The other District 1 candidates included Denise Norman, who captured 23% of the vote and a total of 1,029 ballots cast, and Courtney J. Ratliff with 22% of the vote with 978 ballots cast. Quote, "The first 4 years of my election term was a learning process," Booker said. "I'm ready to put that learning to work for MISD." Booker added that he ran for re-election because he wanted to finish what he started in his first term with the bond and wanted to continue to push for positive changes at MISD. Quote, "I want to thank the constituents of District 1 for trusting me and re-electing me for the Midland ISD School Board," Booker said. In a social media post, Booker extended his gratitude to his opponents for running a clean and respectful race. The Reporter-Telegram was not able to reach Norman for comment. However, Ratliff provided a statement about the unofficial election results. Quote, "I want to offer my congratulations to Michael Booker," he told the Reporter-Telegram. "I called him after the last polling location posted the results and personally congratulated him. Michael is a good guy, and we have always been good friends, and that will not change. As far as the race, I did the best I could do and will continue to push for positive changes. Midland is not seeing the last of me yet. I'm proud to remain at my school, making an impact on young people's lives. The people of Midland have spoken, and there is a lot of change happening at the MISD School Board. We are moving forward and will continue doing so. I want to thank everyone who supported me during this election," end quote. District 2. Angel Hernandez defeated incumbent Robert Marquez for the MISD Board of Trustees District 2 race. According to unofficial election results, Hernandez won 65% of the vote with 1,913 total ballots cast. Marquez received 34% of the vote and 1,024 ballot votes. The Reporter-Telegram was unable to reach either candidate for comments about the unofficial election results. District 4. Matt Fries was elected as District 4 trustee, according to unofficial election results. Fries took 53% of the vote, with a total of 3,673 ballots cast, while his opponent, Emily Staten Smith, took 46% of the vote, with 3,156 ballots cast. The Reporter-Telegram was initially unable to reach either candidate for comments about the unofficial election results, but both candidates posted statements on their Facebook campaign pages. Quote, I am somber and solemn about the electoral process and still processing the results, Fries said in a Facebook post on Wednesday. I am excited to win, but also am disappointed for a very good candidate who would be a great school board trustee, Emily Staten Smith. She is a great Midlander, has a wonderful family and extended family, ran an admirable and tough campaign, and is as good a person to have in leadership of any kind across Midland as we can offer. I hope she runs again for something again, and I will likely support her if she does. Because of this, I will work extra hard and do the best possible job I can for our kids, teachers, MISD organization, and community. Thank you to everyone who supported me or also held and will hold me accountable. I am not anywhere near perfect and will make many mistakes and will need everyone's help to be a successful board member. End quote. Staten Smith posted to her Facebook page and said, quote, I want to offer my congratulations to Matt Fries. Serving on the school board is such a significant task, and I'm cheering him on as he steps into this role. To each of you who supported, encouraged, and helped along the way, thank you. We're not done showing up for our kids and our schools. End quote. District 7. Joshua A. Gwynn, unseated incumbent Brian Murray as District 7 trustee, according to unofficial election results. Gwynn captured 53% of the vote, with a total of 3,948 ballots cast, and Murray received 46% of the vote, with a total of 3,393. The reported telegram was unable to reach either candidate for comment Tuesday night. Quote, I want to take a moment to say thank you to Brian Murray for serving our community, students, teachers, and District 7 for the past 8 years, Gwynn said Wednesday morning through his Facebook page. Thank you to your family for sacrificing time with you to be able to do so. Good luck in this next chapter. Congratulations to all the new and re-elected school board trustees. Now let's get to work. End quote. Murray posted the following statement on his Facebook page. Quote, District 7 and all of MISD, it's been a true honor to serve you for 7.5 years. I walk away with my head up knowing I worked hard and served from the heart. I know there are good things in store for MISD. I want to congratulate Josh and wish him the best going forward. Thank you all for allowing me to serve. End quote. Two newcomers to join council. The story was written by Trevor Hawes, editorial director. The dais in council chambers will look a little bit different in the coming months. Longtime city councilman Scott Dufford, who represents District 1, opted to not run for re-election, opening the door for a new face to fill a familiar seat. Plus, there was the four-contender race for two at-large council positions, which after Tuesday's general election saw a newcomer take victory. Quote, I am appreciative for all of the votes I received and am appreciative of the people who believe in me, said John Burkholder, who captured the most votes in the at-large race. Burkholder collected 17,764 votes, the most of any at-large candidate, according to unofficial results from the Midland County Elections Office. Quote, it's time to go to work for Midland, end quote. Incumbent Robin Poole followed in vote tally with 15,656, making her re-election campaign successful. Quote, I'm really grateful for the people of Midland for putting their trust in me for another 3 years, she told the reporter telegram. Incumbent Eric Davidson will roll off the council after collecting 13,094 votes, which put his tally at the third highest. Davidson joined City Council this year after winning a special election in May, called for after the untimely death of Dan Corrales in January. Rance C. Norton placed fourth in the at-large race with 8,142 votes. Also joining the dais will be Brian Stubbs, who handily won the District 1 spot with 7,847 votes, or 71% of the vote, over Heather Bredemus, who had 3,189 votes, or 29%. Quote, "I'm proud Midland came out and voted," Stubbs told the reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. He said he is very honored to be elected and looks forward to being part of the community and addressing issues and finding solutions. Incumbent John Norman of District 1 ran unopposed and was re-elected. Stephen Vieira defeats incumbent Luis Sanchez. The story was written by B. K. Richter. Midland County Republican Stephen Vieira defeated his Democratic incumbent Luis Sanchez in the race for Midland County Commissioner for Precinct 3 during Tuesday's general election. According to unofficial voting results, Vieira took 61% of the vote with a total number of 4,417 ballots cast. Democrat opponent and incumbent Commissioner Luis Sanchez captured 38% of the vote with a total of 2,805 ballots cast. Vieira said his top concern for his campaign was bringing clean water into the county. While Texas counties cannot operate water districts, he said he wants to lead the way for one to be created. Quote, "Can I do this within the next 3 years? Probably not," Vieira said. "But creating a water district in Midland County is something that I want," end quote. Regarding his win over his opponent, Vieira said connecting with voters in Precinct 3 was critical to his success. Quote, "I think people were ready for a change," he told the reporter Telegram. "There's a lot of things we want to see changed, and continuous communication is going to be critical," end quote. Another election topic was the prospect of a county-owned golf course. Vieira says he is conflicted. Quote, "We're a young community, and we need fun things for families to do. However, we need to make sure we take care of our needs before our wants," he said. "We want a golf course, but we need water. We need roads. We need a well-functioning sheriff's office," end quote. Commissioner Sanchez did not immediately respond to requests by the reporter Telegram for comment. Midland County Constable Race. For the Precinct 3 Midland County Constable race, Republican Jerry Cook II unseated the Democrat incumbent Larry Woodruff. According to the unofficial voting results, Cook secured 60% of the vote with a total of 4,291 ballots cast. Democratic opponent Larry Woodruff captured 39% of the vote with a total of 2,858 ballots cast. Cook thanked all the supporters and said that he couldn't wait to serve not only his community, but also his precinct. Quote, "I just want to thank everyone for putting up with all the political signs," he said. "I have never been a politician. I have been in law enforcement for more than 20 years. End quote. Cook reflected that his campaign was a learning experience, but said he hopes to make everyone who supported him during the campaign proud. Quote, "I want to make a difference in my precinct and community," he told the reporter Telegram late Tuesday evening. Woodruff also commented on the race saying, quote, "It's not looking good for me right now, but may the best man win," end quote. He added that when he took office more than 6 years ago, he understood his job of serving the papers that require residents to attend their court dates. Quote, "I want to thank all my supporters," he told the reported telegram. "I want to thank everyone who came out and supported me during the past years," end quote. For the additional uncontested Midland County Constable races for Precincts 1, 2, and 4, Douglas Brown, Precinct 1, received 10,560 ballots cast. Scott Casimir, Precinct 2, received 15,724, and Jamie J.B. Hall, Precinct 4, received 15,653. For the county's uncontested races, Midland County Attorney Russell Malm received a total of 47,927 votes. Midland County Sheriff David Kreiner tallied 47,986. Running unopposed, Mary Helen Bowers was elected as the Midland County Tax Assessor Collector. Additionally, Charles Hall was elected as Precinct 1 Midland County Commissioner, receiving 10,275 votes. Editorial Director Trevor Hawes contributed to this report. Cal Hendrick defeats incumbent Javier Hoven. The story was written by B.K. Richter. On Tuesday, Cal Hendrick defeated the incumbent Javier Hoven in the City of Odessa mayoral race. According to the unofficial Ector County election results, Hendrick took 66% of the vote with a total number of 19,259 votes. Hoven captured 33% of the vote with a total number of 9,676 ballots cast. In Midland County, where the City of Odessa extends, Hendrick also showed a majority of support over Hoven. Hendrick took 81% of the vote, with a total number of 1,417 votes. Hoven showed 18% with 324 votes. For the Odessa City Council at-large seat, the unofficial results for Ector County show the incumbent Denise Swanner lost to Craig Stoker. Stoker received 55% of the vote, with a total number of 15,375 ballots cast. Swanner captured 44% of the vote, with a total number of 12,157 ballots cast. In Midland County, Stoker received 64% of the vote, with a total number of 1,055 ballots cast. Swanner took 35% of the vote, with 573 ballots cast. Stoker said that for his race against Swanner, for him, it was all about how well people had done their jobs. Quote, "For those who weren't satisfied, I spent several months presenting my case for an opportunity to do that job," he told the reporter Telegram. Additionally, Stoker commented on the good things about Odessa. Quote, "I see the potential we have here," he said. "We have the ability to build our own businesses and create things that are unique to our area. When you look at where we are on the map, we're in the middle of nowhere. We've had to adapt as a community because no one is coming to save us. We've learned to take care of ourselves and take care of each other, particularly through nonprofits," end quote. Another Odessa council seat in District 1 resulted in an upset where Eddie Mitchell overtook incumbent Mark Mata. Mitchell captured 61% of the vote with a total number of 2,921 ballots cast in Ector County. Mata showed 38% of the vote with a total number of 1,804 ballots cast. Midland County residents did not vote in this race, so no voting results were recorded. For the Odessa City Council District 2, incumbent Stephen Thompson defeated his opponent, Nayeli Urias. Thompson received 57% of the vote, with a total number of 3,785 ballots cast in Ector County. Urias received 42% of the vote, with a total number of 2,821 ballots cast. In Midland County, those results were echoed, with Thompson showing 61% of the vote, with 978 ballots cast, and Urias showing 38% of the vote, with a total number of 616 ballots cast. Odessa College's $355 million bond did not pass in the November 5th general election. In Ector County, 19,137 ballots voted for the education initiative, and approximately 20,542 ballots voted against the measure. Residents of Midland County could not vote for this bond. The bond would have funded parts of the Vision 2030 plan. Editorial Director Trevor Hawes contributed to this report. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, November 7th. We celebrate the memory of Corey Deshaun Adams, born in 1985 in Houston, Texas, to Miss Martha Renee Jackson and Mr. Anthony T. Adams, along with his stepmother, Mrs. Terry Adams. Corey was a beloved husband to Dr. Brittany D. Adams, father to Madison Caitlin Adams, son, brother, uncle, nephew, and friend. On October 25th, Corey passed away, leaving a legacy of love, dedication, and friendship that touched all who had the pleasure to know him. Growing up in Midland, Texas, Corey attended Robert E. Lee High School and graduated with the class of 2003. He went on to attend Prairie View A&M University, where Corey completed both a bachelor's degree in accounting and a master's of science degree in accounting, setting the stage for a promising career in his field. Corey was preceded to death by his bonus father, Anthony Tyrone Brazell, his cherished Nana, Mary Sis Washington, his beloved aunt, Latifah Jamala Johnson, grandfather Booker T. Lott, Sr., and his great-grandfather, Sherman Big Daddy Jones, Jr. We invite family and friends to join us as we honor Corey's life and legacy. Viewing will be Thursday, November 7th, between 4 p.m. and 8 p.m. at Singing Hills Funeral Home in Dallas, Texas. Funeral service will be on Friday, November 8th, at Concord Baptist Church in Dallas, Texas. Savannah Corrine Calloway, beloved daughter and partner, born August 7, 2002 in Phoenix, Arizona, passed away unexpectedly due to a tragic incident on October 19. Savannah had a deep passion for music. She found immense pleasure in reading, especially when sharing stories with her daughter Zoe. She is survived by her daughter Zoe Poteet of Lubbock, Texas, her partner, Stephen Warren of Midland, her mother, Crystal Calloway of Midland, Texas, her father, Cody Jolly of Munns Park, Arizona, her grandparents, Gary and Edith Calloway of Lubbock, Texas, and Lisa and Russell Stooks of Prescott, Arizona, her great-grandparents, Mike and Julie Jolly of Angel Fire, New Mexico, her sister, Samara Corin Ladruca Anderson of Bullhead City, Arizona, and Uncle Christopher and Aunt Aleja Calloway of Liberty, Texas. Savannah is remembered by her partner's family, Stephen's mother, Martina Warren, his father and stepmother, David and Pam Warren, and his brothers, Anthony and Landon. A celebration of life will be held on Wednesday, November 13th at 1 p.m., at Serenity Memorial Gardens, 6800 South Highway 349, Midland, Texas. Food and fellowship will follow from 2:30 to 4:30 at 710 West Ohio in Midland, Texas. Larry Merle Mercer, age 70, passed away on Thursday, October 24th in Midland, Texas, after a 2-year battle with cancer. He was born in 1953 in Pampa, Texas, to Merle Lloyd Mercer and Callie Naima Birgit Mercer, and was the younger brother to Vicky and, at age 5, became big brother to Nancy. Larry grew up in Skeleton, Texas, where he attended elementary school and graduated from White Deer High School in 1972. Larry's working career began at age 17 when he worked at the Carson County feedlot near Pampa while still in high school. He became a cowboy in working ranches in the Texas Panhandle. Larry went to Frank Phillips College to learn welding, after which time he worked on pipelines in Kansas and Oklahoma. Larry loved planes and flying and earned his pilot license when he was 27 years old. Later, he and Susie bought a pipeline patrol business, renaming it LM Air Patrol. He also served for several years as a member of the board of directors of Midland Memorial Hospital. Larry is survived by Susie, his devoted wife of nearly 31 years, his son Sloan Mercer of Rockford, Illinois, daughter Laren Mercer Sullivan of Midland, as well as several stepchildren, 15 grandchildren, and 10 great-grandchildren. He is also survived by sisters Vicky Mercer Brown of Fort Worth and Nancy Mercer of Ruidoso. Visitation will be Friday, November 8th from 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. at Colonial Bible Church, 6112 Highway 349 in Midland. Memorial service will be held Saturday, November 9th at 2 p.m. at Colonial Bible Church. In lieu of flowers, donations may be given to Colonial Bible Church Building Fund, Post Office Box 7046 Midland, Texas. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Walt's Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwalsh.com. Cora Lee Harris passed away on October 30th. She was born January 17, 1944, to Tanolia and Eva Craig in Marquez, Texas. She lived in Marquez, Texas, where she attended school. She moved to Midland, Texas in 1961. Cora was employed with the Kennedys for 28 years. She was preceded in death by her parents, Tanolia and Eva Craig, two brothers, J.C. Collins and Freddie Lee Craig, two sisters, Lena Collins and Mary Craig Durham, a nephew, Kevin Levels, as well as her companion, Mitchell E. Lovegreen. She is survived by her son, Jermaine Harris of Midland, Texas, two grandchildren, a sister, Dorothy Hudson, brother-in-law, Jimmy Durham. In keeping with Miss Cora's wishes, cremation services have been arranged. Funeral arrangements are under the care of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com. Shanta Yvette Thomas, age 41, born in Atlanta, Georgia, passed away on Monday, October 28th in Midland. Memorial services will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, November 15th at Elevate Church, 200 Baldwin Street in Midland. Rosalie Jane Brown, age 86, of Odessa, passed away on November 2nd in Odessa, Texas. A viewing will be held on November 6th at American Heritage Funeral Home. A funeral service will be held on November 7th at 10 a.m. at Sherwood Baptist Church in Odessa. Burial will follow at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements or by American Heritage Funeral Home of Midland. Evelyn Hoyle, age 58, born in Midland, Texas, passed away on Tuesday, October 29th, in Midland. Celebration of life will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, November 7th, at Mayberry Funeral Home, 406 East Illinois Avenue in Midland. Helen Anna Ibarra, age 58, passed away on Friday, November 1st, in Midland. Helen will be deeply missed by her family and all those who knew her. Services have been entrusted to Mayberry Funeral Home. Marilyn Mack, age 69, of Midland, passed away on November 4th. Service is pending with Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Enrique S. Tarango, age 68, of Pecos, died Tuesday, November 5th, in Pecos. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, November 9th, at Our Lady of Fatima Catholic Church in Van Horn, Texas. Burial will follow at Van Horn Cemetery. Arrangements are by Heritage Funeral Home of Van Horn, Texas.
This is Mikey, and I'm reading from the Odessa American for Wednesday, November 6th, 2024. Numerous Complaints Filed Against City Employee by Kim Smith. A City of Odessa department head under investigation by the Texas Department of Public Safety's Texas Rangers was the subject of four complaints filed within days of each other with the Human Resource Department 1 year ago. According to reports obtained by the Odessa American under the Texas Public Information Act, Equipment Services Director Chris Adams was not disciplined as a result of any of the complaints, some of which were sexual in nature. Last month, the Odessa American filed two open record requests with the City of Odessa after receiving tips that complaints had been filed against Assistant City Manager Agapito Gapi Bernal and that Adams had been accused of misusing his government purchase card. The paper was notified the city had asked the Texas Attorney General's office for a legal opinion on both of its requests with City Attorney Dan Jones, stating the release of the information would interfere with the detection, investigation, or prosecution of the crime. Around the same time, the City Council took no action after going into executive session to discuss the appointment, employment, evaluation, reassignment, duties, discipline, or dismissal of Adams, who was hired by the city in June 2023. Although the Rangers' investigation is ongoing, the City of Odessa did release some documents pertaining to Adams on Monday. On October 12, 2023, one of Adams' employees filed a grievance stating Adams should not have the position that he has. He treats everyone with such disrespect. The employee said Adams has a policy requiring employees to write their appointments outside the office on a shared calendar, and yet he disciplined them for being out of the office for 3 hours without verbally informing him they'd gone for lunch and an appointment. I put it on the calendar and he said he didn't care and he doesn't feel like he needs to look at a calendar to know where I am, the employee wrote. 4 days later, another employee wrote a 6-page complaint about Adams. The employee alleged that upon hearing a prospective employee's urine test came back positive for drugs, Adams chided the man, saying he would have delayed the testing had he known. The employee further alleged Adams went out with a mother and daughter the night before they came in to possibly discuss doing business with the city. The employee quoted Adams as saying, "I could do them, mother and daughter. I've done that before." The employee also wrote, "When talking about getting redacted, he started showing us cars to see which one would be appealing to women to pick them up." In addition, the employee said Adams bragged about being part of the cool club because Gapi likes him so much, and alleged Adams once tried to shrink wrap them and then became uncommunicative because they wouldn't let him. He told Name Redacted that if we wanted to drink while at work, it was okay. If we didn't say anything about him drinking, he wouldn't say anything about us. He said he would hide a flask in his desk. The employees said Adams drank while at the city picnic and was driving a city vehicle that day. The employee further alleged Adams said he was going to use his government-issued credit card to play golf and claim it was for a convention or training. He had to cancel his plans, however, because city manager John Beckmeyer scheduled a meeting with him, the employee wrote. Adams once had to pay $30 to Dos Amigos, and he told them he was going to figure out a way to get that money back, and he didn't care how. In addition, the employee said Adams stood up a meeting with Great Lakes Petroleum, leaves or takes off days off without following proper procedures, and was really rude to vendors. They also said Adams often spoke about his dislike for someone who wasn't a Cool Club member, and he wasn't going to do anything for them because that person was going to be the next to go. They also said Adams bragged about Bernal telling him he could get rid of whomever he wanted with cause. On October 17th, another of Adams' employees filed a complaint with Human Resources, alleging Adams came into a break room and asked one of the men present who he'd rather see naked and then supplied two names. When the other man declined to answer the question, Adams was said to have gotten red and walked away. The employee told HR they thought Adams should be reprimanded. "The attitude is not correct, and he needs to treat people with respect," they wrote. On October 25, a fourth employee said Adams heard him discussing vaping with another employee and told him vaping was bad for him. The employee said when he told Adam everything is bad for you, Adams made a remark of a sexual nature. The remark was redacted in the report. He replied saying, "Redacted isn't bad for you as you are young and grow older. You only get it on birthdays and holidays," the employee wrote. "I did not reply as it made me uncomfortable." Something to be proud of. Education Foundation grant helping to transform WNY Courtyard. The National Junior Honor Society and the husband and wife team of Ronnie and Kimberly Neal at Wilson and Young Medal of Honor Middle School have joined forces to obtain a $2,500 Education Foundation grant for an outdoor classroom. The courtyard where the classroom will be located will include raised plant beds where students can grow things like mint. There will be a compost bin. Soil has been donated and student artists will be asked to create a mural on the outside walls. There will be an awning all day down the courtyard. The project was about 2 years in the making. The funds were raised through dances. The space will be able to accommodate about 32 students. There was a pit. It was all dirt. At one time, it had been very beautiful back when this was Hood Junior High, and it had fallen into disrepair, said Ronnie Neal, chair of the Social Studies Department at Wilson and Young. "Our kids, over 2 years, raised a little over $17,000, Neal said. "It's a bit of work in progress. Like I said, every year we add a little bit. We're gearing up for our Halloween dance now. We should make about $4,000 off of it," Neal said in a recent interview. Neal said the idea first started so the special needs students on campus could go outside during the day. The concept continued to develop into an outdoor classroom where students could enjoy the outdoors and learn. "This year, I wrote a grant to get our seating and our tables, so hopefully we'll have those in and in place by the time spring gets here. This will be the first year that we're actually able to use this for our kids," Neal said. When he and his wife came to Wilson and Young from Bonham Middle School, there was no National Junior Honor Society or Student Council. The campus had nothing, and we had both sponsored the National Junior Honor Society at Bonham. So when we came here, we started it here, Neal said. They still don't have a student council, but the National Junior Honor Society took up the outdoor classroom project. "It's just been passed on year after year, that all of the fundraising that we do, this is what it's going towards, but it took us 2 years to get the money for the turf. They purchased the compost bin, we got a new lawnmower, weed eater," Neal said. "They're also going to have a covering that runs the length of the courtyard, which had to clear the school board," he said. "Then, of course, we'll have our learning stations out here with umbrellas. It will be a nice area for the kids," Neal said. He added that most of the students are low income and the school still had a stigma of being what the kids called a ghetto school, even though it's no longer Hood Junior High. "When you looked out here, it looked like a trash bin. It looked like something out of Sanford and Son," Neal said. But since they started the project, the students have started to take pride in it. "I think a lot of these kids, they don't have a place that's green, where they can sit outside safely and just enjoy being outside, and learn something they can take pride in," Neal said. The students have taken charge of the outdoor area, which also features 13 turtles. all grade levels will be able to enjoy the outdoor area. The kids come outside and feed them every day. They've named them. They know them. We had only 12. We've had a baby now, so they got a new one. It's kind of brought them into a connection with the environment, and it's giving them something to be proud of. We're one of the only middle schools that actually is going to have the ability for kids to go outside and learn, Neil said. Neil said he had applied for grants before but didn't get them. I tell teachers all the time, I say, it's free money. It's out there and it's a little bit of work, but you just do it. You're not going to hit it all the time, but eventually you will. Eventually, if it's for something that's a right cause. I think that when a lot of people understand the state that a lot of our kids are growing up in and some of the neighborhoods and environments that they're coming from to have this opportunity, I think really must have spoken to someone on the committee that chose the grants, he added. Principal Megan Watts said she is extremely excited about the investment by the National Junior Honor Society and the grants provided to Neil from the Education Foundation. Revitalizing our courtyard has been an initiative of NJHS, and with this further investment, we are one step closer to creating an innovative space for our students, Watts said. American Legion Post to host Veterans Day event, Day to Honor Those Who Served in the U.S. Military, by Nathaniel Miller. Preston Parrott wants American veterans to know they are appreciated and is asking West Texas to help him honor them. American Legion Post 430 will host its annual Veterans Day event at 11 a.m. on November 11th at 2701 East 8th Street, with Jay Hendricks scheduled to give remarks. Veterans will then attend the canteen to have a toast to their fellow veterans. That's a tradition we've been doing for years, Preston said. The veterans salute their comrades, wherever they are and wherever they live, and we celebrate them with a shot of cognac. Veterans Day started in 1919 when President Woodrow Wilson proclaimed November 11th as Armistice Day to honor the Americans who served in World War I. The war's ceasefire was at 11 a.m. November 11th, 1918. In 1938, U.S. Congress made November 11th a federal holiday, and the name was changed to Veterans Day in 1954 to honor the veterans of World War II and Korea. The University of Texas Permian Basin is also scheduled to host their own Veterans Day event at 9 a.m. Friday in the UTPB Quad. The Ector County Senior Center has also scheduled their annual Veterans Day luncheon at 11 a.m. Thursday at the Ector County Northside Senior Center, 1225 North Adams Avenue. OHS Mariachi teacher has best of both worlds. Although he has a degree in political science, Jeremy Hernandez has dedicated his life to sharing his love for mariachi and music at Odessa High School. Hernandez serves as mariachi director at OHS, and this is his 11th year with Ector County ISD. What really drew my attention is how important the program was for students. It's an important program to have in our community, so that changed my heart to become a long-term teacher, and also knowing the impact that teachers have on students, Hernandez said. There are about 115 mariachi program at OHS, about 100 at Crockett Middle School, where Hernandez also teaches, and 143 at Ector Middle School. It's quite a dynamic program, Hernandez said. The Ector Mariachi director is Arlen Juarez. Having just come out of being an in-district charter school, Ector is catching up on its fine arts programs, and Hernandez said they will accomplish that goal. The students will have a concert at 6:30 p.m. December 10th at the Odessa High School Performing Arts Center. There is no cost for tickets. Along with teaching, he plays in his own group called Mariachi Armonia. We mostly play on Saturdays. We play just about every weekend as people contract us for their weddings and various events, Hernandez said. He began playing mariachi music around 1991. There are 11 musicians in the group. Throughout the years, I've just played with different people. The way the group is made up right now, we've had it going on like that since about 2005, Hernandez said. When they have turnover, it's because they've gone off to college, and some have come back. A lot of these started when they were at the age of 13, and now they are 33, so they've been in a group that many years, Hernandez said. He first got interested in mariachi music by accident. I was at my aunt's house for a Christmas party. When I was young, I was good at imitating various artists, and someone asked me to imitate Vicente Fernandez, who was a big mariachi guy, Hernandez said. He only knew Fernandez's singing voice, so he imitated it. I just let out this loud roar of singing, and after that, people told me that I had a talent for singing. And I had no idea. That's all it took. From there, I started to learn guitar by having bought some guitar books with which to learn. Then I learned to play violin, and then all these other instruments just came flowing along, Hernandez said. In all, he has learned to play 12 instruments. When people learned he could sing and play, they asked him to play for their weddings and various family events. I've been doing that since then. I did that full-time for many years, he said. Born and raised in Odessa, Hernandez attended Odessa College and graduated from University of Texas Permian Basin. He said it feels good to be able to give back to the community. That's what was a changing factor for me as far as becoming a teacher. I realized the need that existed for having a mariachi director at the school, and I felt that this was my way of giving back to the community and teaching kids and helping them flourish, and tapping into talent that students don't know they have, Hernandez said. Hernandez also has played mariachi music and liturgical music concurrently all these years. He started at St. Anthony's Church that he volunteered for the choir, playing guitar and leading the assembly in song. Throughout various years, he served as music director for various Catholic churches. He continues to serve at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Midland for the Spanish Music Ministry. Hernandez has been there since 2014. He also served at St. Elizabeth and Seton from 2021 to 2024. Hernandez said he has always enjoyed liturgical music. For a long time, I've had a deep love for liturgical music. What a privilege that I can bridge those with the art of teaching and help others develop a passion for making music, whether it be for serving God and community or for audiences to enjoy in performances, he added. Sarah Evans to perform at Ector Theater by Alex Batt. Excitement is in the West Texas air as Sarah Evans brings her Unbroke tour to Odessa next week. Grab your friends and family for a night of country music and fun before the holidays get into full swing. As the days get shorter, it's the perfect time for an exciting event to ease into the changing seasons. Sarah Evans will be showcasing songs from her newest album, Unbroke, as well as many other biggest hits of her career. Old and new fans alike are sure to be in for a night to remember. Her first album in 7 years, Unbroke, has been received with high praise since its release in June, and now you have the perfect opportunity to hear its songs live. Sarah Evans will be performing in downtown Odessa at the Ector Theater at 7 p.m. on Thursday, November 7th. Seats at the Ector Theater include a range of orchestra options and the balcony, with wheelchair accessibility seating available in both areas. For the full seating chart, visit the Ector Theater's website, theector.com. Sarah Evans is offering a special VIP upgrade for all tickets that includes a meet and greet with Evans after the show. VIP guests will have the opportunity to get a photograph together with Evans, along with a commemorative VIP laminate and an exclusive VIP merch item. This exciting addition to the concert is sure to be the perfect experience for any Sarah Evans fan. Tickets and VIP packages are on sale now, but there's a limited amount available. Get yours online before they're all gone. Evans has recently launched podcast, Diving In Deep with Sarah Evans, chronicles the country star's behind-the-scenes thoughts and stories from her life, not to mention personal conversations with all sorts of interesting guests. Diving In Deep with Sarah Evans can be found anywhere podcasts are streamed. The A Little Bit Stronger singer has received many accolades throughout her career, and now it's time to add an exciting West Texas show to the list. Odessa will be one of the last shows of the Unbroke tour, so come on out and help make it one of the best yet. Tickets are available online at the Ector Theater's website. This Day in History, Wednesday, November 6th. The 311th day of 2024. There are 55 days left in the year. Today in history. On November 6, 1860, former Illinois Congressman Abraham Lincoln of the Republican Party was elected President of the United States as he defeated John Breckinridge, John Bell, and Stephen Douglas. Also on this date, in 1861, James Naismith, the inventor of basketball, was born in Almonte, Ontario, Canada. In 1888, Republican presidential candidate Benjamin Harrison won the electoral vote over incumbent Democrat Grover Cleveland, despite Cleveland gaining 90,000 more total votes. It would be the last time the popular vote winner would lose the election until 2000. In 1928, Colonel Jacob Schick patented first electric razor. In 1947, Meet the Press, the longest-running television show in America, made its debut on NBC. The host was the show's co-creator, Martha Roundtree. In 1956, President Dwight D. Eisenhower won re-election, defeating Democratic nominee Adlai Stevenson II for the second time. In 1977, 39 people were killed when the Kelly Barnes Dam in Georgia burst, sending a wall of water through Toccoa Falls College. In 1984, President Ronald Reagan easily won re-election over former Vice President Walter Mondale, the Democratic challenger who won just one state, his native Minnesota. In 1991, the last oil fire in Kuwait set by retreating Iraqi troops is extinguished. In 1995, Art Modell, the owner of the NFL's Cleveland Browns, announced that he was moving the team to Baltimore, which enraged sports writers and Cleveland fans. In 2012, President Barack Obama won re-election, vanquishing Republican former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney with 332 electoral votes to Romney's 206. In 2018, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, New York, is the youngest person ever elected to the U.S. House of Representatives at 29 years. Today's birthdays. Actor Sally Field is 78. Jazz musician Arturo Sandoval is 75. Author Michael Cunningham is 72. Journalist author Maria Shriver is 69. Author Colson Whitehead is 55. Actor Ethan Hawke is 54. Actor Thandwine Newton is 52. Model actor Rebecca Romaine is 52. Actor Taryn Manning is 46.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, November 7th. Friends' drunk dials are too much to handle. Dear Abby, I have been friends with a couple for 30 years. Both are alcoholics. They function, work at farmers markets, are sociable, have a house, and pay their bills. Yet, at least once, maybe twice a month, they get totally wasted, and the wife calls me and rambles on incoherently. I suspect they get drunk even more frequently, or thankfully, I don't get a call every time they are on a binge. I have been in terrible relationships in which I drank too much to numb myself. Thankfully, I have been out of such toxicity for years. But I'm having increasing difficulty dealing with these drunken phone calls. I suspect I'm the only person my friend calls because she knows few others would understand her slurred babble. I'm weary from these calls. How do I deflect them? Signed, Tired Ear in Arizona. Dear Tired Ear, put an end to those calls by being frank with your friend about the effect they have on you. Do this while she is sober. Tell her you do not want her calling you after she has been drinking because her speech is so slurred that you can't understand what she's saying. Say if it happens again, you will hang up the phone, and if it does, follow through. Let her calls go to voicemail. If you would like to maintain any sort of relationship with this couple, see them socially only when they are reasonably sober. Dear Abby, when I was a teenager, my immigrant grandparents brought back hand-knit sweaters from Ireland, the country in which they were born, for everyone in our family. I cherish mine and take care of it, even though I've outgrown it. Years later, a close friend asked to borrow the sweater for her neighbor's child, who needed something Irish for a show-and-tell event at school. The kids were asked to bring items that had to do with Ireland. When I refused to loan my heirloom sweater, my friend told me she'd already promised her neighbor she could borrow it. She became very angry, accused me of being selfish, and hasn't spoken to me for a couple of months. We live in the same town, so I run into her sometimes. She's cordial, but distant, and clearly still upset with me. Bear in mind that I hardly know my friend's neighbor, the one who wanted to borrow my sweater for her child. But even if I did, I wouldn't loan this heirloom to anyone. Was I wrong? Signed, Sentimental in Michigan. Dear Sentimental, you were neither selfish nor wrong. Your friend was out of line. She should never have promised anyone the use of property that wasn't hers. And for her to ice you now for refusing to give it to her and risk that something so precious to you could be damaged is plenty nervy. My advice is to follow her example. Be cordial but distant, and do not permit her to make you the bad guy for saying no. Dear Abby is written by Abigail Van Buren, also known as Jean Phillips, and was founded by her mother, Pauline Phillips. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or Post Office Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.